Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection, where we interview marketers and entrepreneurs to hear the stories they tell about their brands. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. This is a podcast by humans for humans who also happen to be marketers. On this week's show, our guest is Melissa Sargent.
Melissa is Chief Marketing Officer at Litmus, where she runs worldwide marketing initiatives, including corporate and product branding, demand generation, product marketing, public relations, and event management. Prior to Litmus, she was CMO at customer experience leader Sugar CRM and at e-commerce innovator Channel Advisor. With more than 30 years of marketing experience in the tech sector, she has expertise in SaaS go-to-market strategy and execution, customer success, digital demand generation, and branding.
This year is the 50th anniversary of email, which I didn't know until our conversation with Melissa. Although email is something we use every day, Melissa framed the value and intricacies behind email marketing in a way that has altered my perspective ever since we talked. We discussed everything from what email personalization really means to the demise of the third-party cookie.
We had a great discussion with Melissa. I love the data-driven transformation she's helped organizations make throughout her career. And it's amazing how email has been around for so long, but keeps reinventing itself. So without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Melissa Sargent.
Melissa, welcome to this week's episode of Long Story Short.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, we are super excited to have you here. And to start things off, we wanted to begin by discussing your self-imposed characterization as an accidental marketer. And we would love if you could tell us a little bit about how you stumbled into this world.
Yes. So, you know, graduating from college, my education was in political science and U.S. history. And my first job out of school, one of my first jobs was in a PR agency in the Washington, D.C. area, where it was really more of a public affairs office in the D.C. office. But we also had a combination of corporate clients that were part of the other offices. And so, I got started, was doing really fun things, loved the issues, was writing speeches, doing all these fun things. But the one thing I really didn't like was going to fundraisers. And I very quickly realized that if I was going to be in this part of the political arena, or really any part of the political arena, I would have to spend a great deal of my time going to political fundraisers. And if I'd never go to one ever again, I will be super happy about that. And so I, started to pivot to more of the corporate clients and supporting them when they came to Washington. And from there, had an opportunity after that experience to go to my first real corporation, which is a company called Comsat that was later acquired by Lockheed Martin in corporate communications. And that was the real pivotal moment when I officially kind of broke from, that political background and was just really focusing on corporate communications. I did investor relations there, which was an entirely new area for me. And after I left there, I went to my first software company, a company called Landmark Systems Corporation, which was later acquired by ASG Software. Really doing marketing, communications, and PR, but I got to dabble in some other areas of marketing there. And so that really sent me on a path where I did, I was like, oh, and this software thing's pretty cool too. I like this. So I, made these decisions really not knowing what was next, or I didn't have that. Some people talk about they have this plan and they were going to do this, then they were going to do that, then they were going to do this. It was completely unintentional for me. I was just interested in a lot of things and not really afraid to try things that I didn't know how to do. And so from, there, the really next big step change in my career was when I went to CA Technologies, which is now part of Broadcom, in product marketing. And my first day there, I was, just figuring out where things were. I was going in to do security product marketing. And my boss pulls me aside really within the first couple hours and says, hey, we just acquired this company. All the marketers are going to report into you. And in a couple hours, I need you to get on a call with 200 salespeople and explain to them, go to market.
No pressure.
Yes. I was very concerned about that because I had no idea what I was doing. And I certainly got on that call and did my best. But that was another pivotal change for me and my career path, because for whatever reason, even though I had no idea what I was doing through that acquisition, I learned a lot and gained a reputation for somebody who could just get things done. And so that afforded me the opportunity at CA to work in multiple business units and then also do a number of these acquisitions. It was a company that was very, very acquisitive. And the model was, you know, they would acquire a company. We'd have to, you know, bring them into the CA fold, ramp them to the business plan, and go on to the next one. And that was like every 2 years. So I got to spend some good time in multiple different business units and really built out a, you know, a core strength around, it was the best possible training I could possibly have to be a CMO, because product marketing sat at the middle. And then you had to get all these folks, whether they reported to you or not, influence them to get them to support you and drive to the business plan. And really that was, you know, probably the biggest life-changing moment for me when I first had this idea that, you know, all up to this point, I really didn't even think that I wanted to be a CMO. I just didn't really know. And from there, I got the bug and said, oh, I really want to do this and I can make a career out of it. And I think, you know, I think I do an okay job. So I'm just going to keep pushing ahead. And then from there, I went to, you know, Avalara, really got into the SaaS world at Avalara. And then my first CMO gig was at Channel Advisor, which is a publicly traded company in the e-commerce space. And, you know, and from there went to Sugar CRM. And then here I am today at Litmus.
That's awesome. And so, you know, speaking of which, I want to shift into sort of, you know, your role today. And so what does your world, you know, look like leading marketing at an email MarTech company as the business world moves fully digital?
It's really extraordinary in that email has, you know, sometimes I think it doesn't get the attention because it's been around for a while. But what I've quickly learned in my time here is that for many organizations, it's the centerpiece and sort of the last, you know, what's happened to our world in the last year has really stepped that up a level. Because when you think about it, you have this one-to-one relationship with your subscribers. They've invited you into their inbox to communicate with them. And we know that from different studies that email has the highest ROI, you know, from all of the marketing channels. You know, for, you know, every dollar you spend, you get $42 back in that. And then there's also just tremendous insights that you get from your email, and that it's, you know, we say it doesn't end with send, in that if you go back and you look at your email analytics and that information on that send, you can apply that intelligence across a lot of different areas in your marketing mix. So it does a lot more work for you than just, you know, a pure email. It's creating that one-to-one connection with your base, and it's also helping your entire marketing mix.
Yeah, and I was recently reading the Epsilon prediction about, you know, it's funny how 2021 is going to be the year the email shines. And I'm sure like most people, you know, I just, you know, as we were saying, I thought it was a little counterintuitive, you know, for something that had been around so long. But so can you talk about from your perspective, you know, what it means to you and how email can kind of continue to evolve in the modern digital age?
Yeah, I think, you know, the things that are bringing it to the forefront are, one, what happened in the last year really, I think, was an accelerant. I don't look at it as slowing us down. And if you think about the beginning, you know, this time a year ago, most of those communications were happening through email. That was the first place your favorite brands were connecting with you. And it kind of got back, you know, floated back to the top of everybody's list from a marketing mix perspective, because we realized that that was the best way to have that one-to-one connection. Now, when we look at what's, you know, some of these other things that are happening in the overall marketing organization around digital, that this is a big part of digital, and probably most important is personalization in terms of, you know, that one-to-one connection. And when I say personalization and email, I mean beyond just the first and last name and trying to, you know, get that right within your email. We all get those emails. And that, while that's a very nice, warm, open, it's not what we really mean about personalization and email. When we talk about personalization and email, we're talking about you're getting the right email at the right time with the right content that's highly specific to what you care about and what you're doing. And that's really the next evolution that we're seeing across the marketing spectrum, across different industries. Of course, our friends in retail and e-commerce are the leaders in this because they've been doing it for a long time. But we know that consumers expect that Netflix, Amazon experience across all of their marketing channels. And email is certainly part of that.
Yeah. And I love that you bring up, you know, retail and e-commerce, but something that we say a lot, you know, B2B really should be copying B2C across a number of dimensions. And the biggest of all of them is that even in B2B, you know, we have to remember we're still selling to people, right? We still sell to individuals. And so I think that's, to me, is really the big, I wouldn't say unexplored, but that's sort of the next layer of how do you get into personalization where it's not just personalization around sort of the company you work at, right? But to you specifically, right? Like, how is it going to help you and how might it be different? You know, how can you actually personalize beyond just sort of the firmographics of a company and we know you're in the market for X or Y, but that might not affect the particular individual that's on the receiving end of the email.
Yeah. And what we're really seeing is this evolution from and I think this is where we are today. We've, you know, gone from, we started with one to many, and then today we're at one to some. Right. And getting to that true one to one is the next big challenge. And there's a number of things that feed into that challenge. One, of course, is everyone's, you know, data infrastructure and their customer data platforms and just having clean data that is accessible, that you're confident in, and that you can, you know, actually harvest to make these intelligent insights. And what we really see for the next challenge is that, you know, what marketers do today, and a lot of this is all on spreadsheets, right? We have these, we pull out these different segments, we're looking for certain attributes, we figure out what the offer is going to be for this cohort within that segment, and then we communicate with them. Personalization is like 10-step. True personalization is several steps ahead of that, where it's truly one person, one offer that's very specific to them at the exact moment that they need it. And that's where things like, you know, we hear a lot about artificial intelligence and machine learning, and that's really going to be very important in this evolution because it's a math problem that cannot be solved on pure spreadsheets. You really need that extra layer to be able to process that information and do it in real time.
Yeah. And that, I think that's really the key, is the real time, right? Like after the fact, there's a lot you could do on the spreadsheets, but if it's not happening in that moment, you've sort of lost it. And so I think that's a great perspective of, you know, how can the technology also evolve to be able to support this from the data perspective. But it's sort of, you know, it's hard for me to talk about personalization without my mind immediately going to sort of the extreme, which has kind of been the third party cookie, right? So just kind of curious your thoughts on, you know, kind of where that is and where the world is heading towards. Would love to hear your thoughts.
And, you know, we've seen this evolution with, you know, particularly in email marketing with things like GDPR, where we've had to get consent for things. The California Privacy Act as well. We've been sort of chipping away at this. And it's such an interesting juxtaposition for marketers because we know from every survey that we see that consumers and our customers, whether your consumers are businesses or they're actual, you know, consumers, want that one-to-one personalized, you know, human experience. And on the other hand, it's like, but we don't really want you to track us that much and see what we're doing because that feels intrusive to me. And, you know, the regulations that we've been seeing kind of have been slowly chipping away at that. At this point, I felt like those were actually just good business policies that we should only be emailing people who want to receive emails first. To me, to this point, it's felt like just really good business. What gets more challenging with the demise of the third-party cookie is things that we've become very dependent upon, like multi-touch attribution. Mm-hmm. How do you do multi-touch attribution if you can't enable cookies that track people wherever they're going so that you know as a marketer, and this is particularly important to me in the B2B world, where we try to have a very blended and diversified marketing mix to see that paid search is doing this for us, email's doing this for us, we're getting this much from direct, this much from organic. Having that comprehensive view of what's actually driving conversions, opportunities, pipeline, and ultimately closed won revenue is really, really paramount. And so we're in this interesting in-between place now with the third-party cookie because we know what's coming. And I feel like every day I'm reading a new article. And today I just saw one. I haven't read the whole thing, but it's talking about how it might be a bit slower happening in Europe than it is happening in the US. And, you know, there's a lot to watch on this because I wish I could say the third-party cookie is going away and here's how we're going to address it and still get the visibility that we need. And I don't think we're there yet. I saw that Nielsen had made an announcement a few weeks ago where they felt like they had some multi-touch stuff that would give you that cross-channel view, but it's truly an evolving thing. There's literally new stuff coming out about it every single day. And I think on the surface, it's one of those things that looks great for the consumers, but in some ways is really just, you know, as vendors who are having to work in this arena, putting you in these, you know, walled gardens, you know, that we're, you know, of course we've been working with them for a long time, but this is just a whole new level that we have to, you know, the expertise we have to develop to be able to still be effective in this environment and do what we need to do it as marketers. And so you have it. It's a really interesting time because you have these two very important initiatives happening in our industry at the exact same time, at the exact same volume, and they are seemingly at odds with one another.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hit on a key point. We do some research around marketing leaders, and 2 years running now, the number one pain point far and away has been attribution, right? So, I mean, this is something that's already the biggest challenge, especially in B2B, especially when you have long and complex sales cycles. And so removing sort of a big component that made accessible the, you know, the bits that they had to hang on to is going to throw all of that in a flux for sure. One thing I think, again, just back to sort of the power of email, though, that I'm interested in is, you know, knowing that email is for a lot of organizations is going to become, I don't want to say the replacement for, but in a lot of ways, it seems like sort of the easiest way to kind of make up for whatever is going to be lost by the visibility of the third-party cookies. But just, you know, curious for your thoughts on that.
I couldn't agree with you more because, you know, email, if you have those email addresses, like you've already done the work. I mean, what you see all these vendors doing right now is scrambling for that first-party data. And you'll probably notice that when you're going to websites, if you do, I do a shameless amount of online shopping and I've been doing a lot a lot more since in the last year, but they're asking you for your cell phone. They want your mobile number. And this is all to get all of that first party data. The great thing about email doing it, we've been doing it this way for a long time. You have that information today. And so that you're already able to connect with your audience and your subscribers and communicate what you need to help, you know, address that. And, you know, you know, we often see that email is becoming much more important in the marketing mix when people really evaluate what it's actually driving for their companies. You know, sometimes it's, you know, like number one is the website, maybe number two is organic. And then, you know, email is often like in that top three of the most important things. By having your email house in order, you are certainly in a much better place to be able to handle what this is going to do to the rest of the mix. And possibly by getting your house in order with email now, you can turn up that dial, because I tend to look at, as a CMO, I look at our marketing mix as like we've got our hands on the wheels, and they're sort of, we're always turning these dials on a daily basis, whether, you know, it's through paid search, paid social, what we're doing on email, on the website. This is a dial that you can turn up while you're figuring out how your company's going to be able to handle, you know, what you're not going to be able to see and do without third-party cookies.
So we've covered a little bit about what your world is like in terms of what work you do, but something I'm always really interested in is how the company culture shapes that work further or helps influence it. And so I saw recently that you shared a LinkedIn post about Be Beyond Litmus, which recently took the form of a team-wide day off. But I'm really interested if you could tell us a little bit more about this core value and other central values that help sort of shape the broader culture at Litmus.
You know, our culture is one of the things that attracted me to Litmus, and that we see in our employee feedback surveys. That is something that's very, very important to people. One of the things is, you know, you saw the Be Beyond Litmus, and we definitely encourage and support people to that they have a responsibility within their communities, and we do everything we can to encourage them to do that. So, you know, like a lot of other companies, on election day, that was a day off for us, so that you, if you weren't voting that day, that you could go and volunteer. There's a real, you know, compassionate consideration that we have that is really core to our values, and that people truly, really care about each other. And I know that sounds really warm and fuzzy, but as somebody who's been in the business for 30 years, I can tell you it's very, very different here than anywhere I've ever worked. We've always had this remote first culture. So when I got here, you know, which was a few months before the world changed, we already had 50% of our organization that was remote. We just want to hire the best possible people. So when that switch had to change, which, you know, I think for some companies might have been a stark change in how their infrastructure was and how they onboard employees, we didn't have to deal with that. That's how we worked, you know, anyway. We certainly all miss being together, and we're looking forward to coming back together. But there's a real community aspect in our company, and I think that's very analogous. The email community is very much this really warm community that supports each other and helps each other. And because we're a part of that, I think a lot of that has gone into our culture. You mentioned you saw the LinkedIn posts. So this year we'll have 4 employee wellness days, and those days are real days. Everybody puts their out of office on. Of course, we have a bat phone for our customers in case they have an emergency, but everybody turns off Slack, no email. And the idea is do whatever you want to do that day to help you relax and, you know, recharge, because I think, you know, we're all feeling some level of fatigue the longer this, you know, has gone on. And that part of just truly caring for people and how they're doing. We had an all hands. So every 2 weeks we have an all hands meeting, and it's really short. It's less than 30 minutes. I think it's 25 minutes. And today we do these ones every so often where we're meeting new team members. And then one of the team members asks them these questions, and there's different categories like personal and hobby. And it's really, again, just to bring people in so that they get to know each other, since we're scattered, you know, all over the globe. But, you know, a lot of fun. This week we also had a chocolate tasting. So they sent us out all of these gourmet chocolates, and a lot of people ate way too much chocolate and were buzzing around from sort of the caffeine. So the company really does care about the well-being of the employees. And I can say, you know, in terms of an onboarding experience, I had never felt that cared for as I have when I came to Litmus a year and a half ago.
Well, Jeff, I think we need to implement a chocolate tasting day starting like maybe tomorrow in a few hours. Like, I'm not sure, but that needs to be something that we take on.
Yeah. And the thing I want to add, you know, Melissa, especially about the employee days, that's so powerful. And especially because in organizations, and I've seen this where they want that to be the culture, but it has to start from the top. And in a weird way, it really takes the leaders sort of taking a step back and turning off their own emails and Slack, right? Because if you don't do that, it doesn't really, no matter what you say, it doesn't really give, it doesn't really allow people the space to do that.
Yeah. And that would, you know, not be an awesome day for you if you come back, you know, after the wellness day and you've got 150 emails from your boss asking
Right.
Something else I really liked that you said is that not only is this something that you really enjoy, but you also know the broader culture enjoys it because you know from survey data that you've done on your employee base, which I think is really, really important. And something Jeff and I talk about a lot is like, if you're going to get lunch for your team, how are you going to know what they want unless you ask them, right? And so understanding where your employees are at and having that open line of communication is so important to developing a company culture that's going to be good for everyone.
Yes. And, you know, everybody gets to weigh in on this stuff. I think for the chocolate thing, like they even asked us in advance if you were like milk chocolate better, dark chocolate, white chocolate, like where, whatever your genre was, we wanted to make sure you got exactly what you were into. What was funny is our team was so on the ball that the chocolate got it sent out. Some people received their chocolate really, really early, and they had kind of forgotten that we were doing this week, or their kids got a hold of it. And so like it was gone. And like, you know, by the time they finished it, they're like, I don't know what this is for. This is wonderful. The company's just sent me chocolate. And they didn't have any chocolate this week. So, but.
Well, and so speaking of, you know, feedback loops, which we're big fans of, you know, on this show, we love to explore really the balance of art and science and marketing. And, you know, throughout your career, there have been a consistent theme of, you know, delivering significant impact to organizations while helping the marketing part of it become much more data driven. And so can you talk about the role that data and analytics has played in those transformations?
For sure. I'm definitely a data-led, science-led marketer. And some of that, you know, that I'm extra passionate about it. The easiest answer, you know, today is that that's our job. Our job isn't to celebrate activities. Our job is to celebrate outcomes and to drive those outcomes. And to be able to do that effectively in marketing, you have to be driving not, you know, much more than just leads. You're driving opportunities, pipeline, and marketing sourced and influenced revenue. And that is our job. I think the reason why I'm extra passionate / annoying about it, maybe to some folks in our organization, is that I started my career 30 years ago. And marketing, you know, we were these cute little pets. Like we were the people that made stuff look good. We ordered the carpet so that your feet didn't hurt at the trade shows. And then when digital came, there was just a complete shift in that we understand it. That used to really frustrate me. I did not like being the cute little pets that people, you know, patted the tops of your heads. And it used to really bother me because I used to think, gosh, we know the customers, we know what they care about, we understand the data, and digital gave us, opened that door for us to flip the switch. And now that, you know, CMOs and a lot of companies, the CMO is also the chief customer officer, that we have this seat at the table. You know, on my watch, I'm not giving the keys to the kingdom back. Like it's important for us as marketers. And the way we have to do that is through knowing our customers, knowing what they care about, knowing what moves the needle, and knowing how the work that we do is actually driving outcomes for our company.
Yeah. And I mean, you're speaking to our heart in terms of knowing your customers. I mean, from our perspective, everything needs to start there. And, you know, just like we sort of talked about how, you know, 2021 might be the year of email, even though it sounds weird to say, I also think, especially from everything we've seen over the last year, I think we're going to see even more growth in terms of marketing have an even bigger seat at the table as they're able to, as more of the sales cycle moves digital, right? Like to have even a bigger seat and a bigger place in that, enabling it to scale and reach more people at, hopefully, as we talked about, the more it gets personalized on a closer to one-to-one sort of basis.
No, absolutely. And you know, this year we were talking about our conference that we put on every year called Litmus Live. And this year is the 50th anniversary of email. So we're going to do some, you know, fun celebrating around that. But it's hard to, you know, imagine that it's been 50 years in email and we've done all of these great things. And there's just so much more from a future perspective of so much innovation that I think we're going to see from email, which might be a little unexpected from folks, but there's so much that we can do, particularly with things like personalization that are at the forefront and just the overall digital landscape of what's happening in marketing. I think the next 50 years are going to be way more exciting than the last.
Yeah. And it's really impressive, the frameworks, as we kind of talked about, that you've put in action in your career and across large companies and startups and in industries that you're not necessarily a consumer. And we talked about this last time versus, you know, Litmus, where you had previously been a customer. And so I'm curious from your perspective, you know, what are some tactics maybe that are a little more universal and what are some of the ones that have been a little more situational, depending on the company you're at?
So I think one of the consistent things when I come in, the first place I look is I get into the data and I try to understand sort of what's actually driving revenue. And at the heart of that is usually the overall demand generation engine. And there's, you know, a couple of key pillars for that. Obviously, your website is that place where that work needs to happen. The other place is sort of is the content part of it. It's a machine. It has to be fed fuel, and that content piece of it is the fuel. And then the other part is your nurturing strategy, you know, whether it's through email or how you're serving ads from an ABM perspective to surround sound in an account. And that's really my first point of entry, is for me to assess in those three key areas, you know, how is the company doing? How mature is that? And that's where I typically focus my energy. And some companies that I've been at that have really needed, you know, have in my past that have needed kind of a restart from a marketing perspective, you know, we've done things really, really basic. It was like, okay, guys, we're going to post 2 blogs a week. We're going to do 1 webinar a month. We're going to create 1 customer success story, and we're going to optimize the journey on the website to make that more intuitive at sort of the most basic tactical level. And even though individually those things are just tactics, they're part of that machinery that gets that engine going and then building up from there.
So just to regroup a little bit, you have gone from being in PR and attending fundraising events that you will never be at again, and have worked your way unintentionally up to a CMO at a company that has chocolate events. Like, let's just take another moment. I'm really interested. It seems like you're at the peak of success. I want to hear, and something we ask a lot of our guests is, how do you define success? And that can be personally. I feel like I've got my definition now from you for professional success, but feel free to expand upon that. I'm very interested to hear your thoughts.
I think about success at this point in my career. The thing that gets me excited and gives me goosebumps is being part of the journey for the next generation of marketers. So when I look at our marketing leadership team here at Litmus, you know, I fall in love with all of my team. So this is, you know, just part of who I, you know, sort of how we work together. But I look at them and I see that person's going to be a CMO, that person's going to be a CMO. I can see it already. And so the thing that gets me the most excited, that I get the most reward from at this point, is being part of their journey and helping them and mentoring. And, you know, I'm very passionate about women in leadership roles, and not surprising, there are a lot of amazing women and men in marketing, but I'm particularly, you know, passionate about that, is just being part of that journey with them.
That's so powerful. I love how you say that you fall in love with your team. I think a lot of us can really associate with that, but I think that's really powerful. What resources would you want to share with our audience? You know, books, blogs, podcasts, anything that you found, you know, relevant, especially recently?
Well, in addition to this podcast, my second favorite podcast is Pivot with Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. And it's funny, is every Saturday, so this is like life in COVID, our exciting trip that we take and our family now is my husband and I go to the grocery store on Saturday morning. And that is the one time we leave our house where we're not just walking the dogs, we're actually getting in the car and going somewhere. And we listen to the Pivot podcast, and we talk about it. And it's opened up a completely different dialogue in our relationship, in that work tends to be complaining about work usually, like this didn't go right, this broke. This is, we're talking about completely different issues, and he's in a completely different world than I am. But we're having discussions, you know, around Bitcoin, which he understands. And as much as I try to understand, I can't get my head around it. Now I finally understand SPACs. So I've crossed that off my list. But they also talk just about these larger marketing issues. And I think it's helped him because he works for UPS and he runs these really large, you know, supply chains and, you know, totally different world. Is that I understand his world a little bit better, and he understands my world a little bit better. I just find their insights really, really compelling and applicable to the work that I do every day. I think for books, my favorite book and favorite thing I do in leadership is StrengthsFinder from Gallup. So every team I've ever run, we all do the StrengthsFinder assessment. And then we map out our entire organization. So we've got a magnum opus, you know, spreadsheet with everybody's top five strengths. And on our one of our offsites that we do throughout the year, we did a virtual one where everybody goes and talks about their strengths, what they relate to, what they were surprised showed up, what they thought would show up. And it really is, you know, at the end of the day, everything we do is about people. And making that connection on the team, particularly when, you know, when you're leading a virtual team, and them truly understanding each other, has made such a big difference in every single team that I've ever managed. Because you're able to be a bit more vulnerable with one another, and then you can understand why sometimes the things that maybe bother you a little about working with somebody, you have that understanding. So that's like my go-to ride or die thing that I put in every single time. Right now I'm reading Adam Grant's Think Again, which is really interesting because I've been listening to all the different podcasts and him talking about that. So I haven't quite finished that one, but I really do get into the leadership stuff, not just because it helps me be better. I just think it's interesting because it's ultimately about people and understanding people.
Yeah, I think you might have been in meetings with Sophia and I without knowing it. I mean, we're huge fans of StrengthsFinders, and we're both currently reading Think Again. So before we let you go, where can people find you and your work on social media?
You can find me on LinkedIn. It's MH Sargent. You can find me on Twitter, MH Sargent. I do a little Instagram, but it's really more for fun, and it's usually of my dog. But if you want to see what's going on in the dog world and the Sargent abode, you can certainly see me there. And I'm also a big Peloton rider, and it's also MH Sargent. So if you're a Peloton rider, please connect with me or high five me on a ride.
Well, that's great. That's a first that we've had somebody share a Peloton handle. So that's great. So, well, Melissa, thank you so much.
Thank you both. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Well, that was a great conversation with Melissa. It's going to be really interesting to follow the fallout from the demise of the third-party cookie. And now it's time for Footnotes with Sophia.
Footnotes is where we expand on portions of the discussion that we wanted to learn more about and share with you. So email is something we all use quite often, whether it be for personal or professional matters. So I found it really interesting when Melissa mentioned that this year marked email's 50th birthday and how despite the innovation that has come from the past 50 years, we will likely see even more in the next 50. Quite often, we're quick to note the new and innovative technology that is enabling us to reimagine customer communications. However, although email has been around quite a while, effectively applying your own unique company innovation to marketing campaigns can unlock some truly phenomenal power that still lies within this platform.
Yeah, 50 years is pretty insane. It kind of makes me wonder where it was for the first 30 of those.
Yeah, well, I think it makes me wonder why we don't have birthday hats right on. But that's a conversation for another time. Yeah. So email marketing has the highest return on investment for particularly small businesses. So this is an extra relevant discussion, Jeff, for us and a lot of our target market. Email evolution and presumably its effectiveness for your campaigns is impacted by the evolution of technology, of course, that the email is being used on. So one fascinating note that I found in actually the 2020 state of email engagement from none other than Litmus is that the new dark mode on Apple computers and phones actually can impact the way your emails are read. And thus, a really important note that they had in their report was that you might want to incorporate a dark mode experience into your campaign strategy, which I thought was really, really fascinating. And this is more important now than ever because the email average time for reading is a mere 11.82 seconds. So it's down 12% from 2 years ago. So having it in the right format, again, to Melissa's point, personalization is so essential. But I thought that fact was really, really fascinating.
Yeah, there's so many things I would love, if we had an hour, I would love to dig into all of these. But so I mean, I think what we touched on is low and lower attention spans, which I think we all are very aware of. And it's interesting that that's certainly going to be, I imagine this is a trend that will continue. So certainly from a strategy perspective, making sure that our emails are to the point, right? Like more than anything else. It's interesting too, the idea. And frankly, the conversation with Melissa was so fascinating to me, just frankly, you know, Litmus and a lot of the other email providers out there that have to not think about the number of different modes and ways that this is going to be consumed. And I think that's an interesting point, which we didn't totally get into, but when it comes to personalization, it's not just about who the person is, who the role is, or the company, but frankly, what device are they reading this on, right? Are they on their phone? Are they on a tablet? Are they on a laptop? And even then, again, beyond that, different dark mode and then different platforms. So Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail, any kind of personal email, it's going to be, you know, different than it shows up in Outlook. And so how do you make sure to sort of account for all of those different experiences? The other thing I want to point out, though, that's kind of where you start with this is like, it's also not surprising that email has the highest ROI. And I think this is where, for me, it's going to be really fascinating when you see the fallout from the third party cookie, because the big thing that this kind of comes back to is, yes, you're going to get the best return when it's somebody who has already opted in and somebody already interested in hearing what you have to say and sharing that with them. So it's not surprising. And I think there's going to be even more sort of emphasis placed on that going forward. And the idea is going to be, yes, how do you now organically actually get to know these people, have them interact with you? Because you won't be able to as easily just find them across platforms on the internet just based on different behaviors that have nothing to do with having come to your own site. Email, remember, is what's referred to as first party. So as long as they're on your site, that is completely fine for you to do. It's really just the idea that you can't stalk people around the internet who haven't been to your site before.
And you mentioned when we first started, you weren't sure where email was for the first 30. So actually, when I was doing my research, I found the first marketing email that was sent was in 1978. So the first email was 1971, hence the 50 years. Mm-hmm. But 78 was the first marketing one, but it was completely unsolicited to 400 contacts that like they just wanted to get their message out, which again, you got to start somewhere, but it's interesting that that was the first place and this is where it has since evolved to.
Yeah, there's two things. One, I want to meet the 400 people that had email addresses in 1978. But two, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I guess it makes sense that, you know, sort of the first use of this for sort of commercial means was something that was unsolicited. I mean, I think that, you know, gives marketing a bad name. But obviously, I think that sure shows quickly why there's been so much regulation put around this. And frankly, similar around the third-party cookie, right? We've now evolved beyond just that. But, you know, and frankly, in other countries, they have much more restrictive limitations. Whereas in the United States, in a lot of cases, you just have to have not opted out. But there are many countries in Europe where you have to have actually have opted in. It's a second, it's a double opt-in where you have to have actually checked in order to receive email communications, mass communications from a particular company. But that's fascinating.
Which goes back to knowing your audience and who's on the other end of that email. So full circle.
Yeah, as always. Well, thank you, Sophia. And as always, all of the research and references can be found in the show notes. If you want to reach out to us directly about this story or to inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short. I want to thank Circan Research for being the sponsor of our show. Circan Research fuels demand for B2B marketers looking to gain a competitive advantage. We leverage original research and data-driven content to supercharge your growth. You can find out more on our website at circanresearch.com.